Welcome to Booking the Territory, a pro wrestling podcast hosted by Mike Mills and Doc Turner. This podcast is all about what's going on in the world of professional wrestling. And now, here's your host, Mike Mills.
Welcome back, wrestling fans, and thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Booking the Territory, where this week I have part two of my conversation with legendary referee from World Class Championship Wrestling and Global Wrestling Federation, Mr. James Beard. If you haven't caught part one, you might want to go back and check it out, because James shared a bunch of stories of the Texas days, and he's gonna share a little bit more this week and talk about his experience and his times in the wrestling business. And even to this day, he's still doing some refereeing, as he refereed in Sherman, Texas last weekend on August 21st for NWA Texoma. Real good show from what he told me. And then, he's still doing it to this day. So, well, before we get into the second part of the interview with referee James Beard, I just want to say thanks again to our sponsors. We are sponsored by our friend Jason Smith, who's a trusted insurance advisor. Jason works in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and can help you with all of your insurance needs, from auto, home, commercial, life, health, and the list goes on. Jason is a farmer's agent. However, even if you're a farmer's agent, he can still help you get a lower rate, because I was with a farmer's agent and still Jason helped me save $400. You can contact Jason directly at 972-834-2516. Just make sure you also follow him on Twitter at URINSURANCEGUY1, or you can email him at jason@goodguyllc.com. His contact information is also on our Facebook page under Booking the Territory. Also want to say thanks to our friends at TNA's Wrestling Palace, located in Grand Prairie, Texas, in Traders Village. Again, your one-stop shop for all of your wrestling memorabilia needs. Give them a call or check them out. I got to get y'all that new phone number, because I think they changed it recently. So before I quote you this old one, I'll get the new one next week. Also, check them out on Facebook. They're there. I want to say thanks again to Better Choices, which was co-founded by healthy lifestyle coach and duo Eric and Malika Beal. I'm just going to say it like this. If your goal is to lose weight and keep it off, more importantly, contact Eric and Malika at Better Choices. That's at www.betterchoices.co. And then on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Pinterest, at Better Choices CEO. So like I was saying in my opening, I talked to James Beard for part two of my discussion with him this week, and I think you'll enjoy it. James and I, we just you know, kind of shoot the bull and talk about his experiences, and it was a lot of fun. Before we get to that, I just want to make sure you're following us on Twitter. That's at Mike504Saints and at BTT_podcast. Make sure you check us out on iTunes. Subscribe to us on Podbean as well. We're also on Stitcher now. Last thing before we jump into everything with James and I was joined about 10 minutes into the review portion of the show after the interview with James by Pipe Bomb Radio founder Felix Olmedo. Felix had me on his show last week on Pipe Bomb Radio, and I was very appreciative of that, as he had me come on and be a panelist as we reviewed SummerSlam. So that's what he, Doc, and I do this week. We kind of go over the thoughts on the matches that were, and kind of a little bit about what happened on Monday night. I'm sure you'll find it interesting. With that being said, let me throw it over to myself, along with James Beard. And then after James and I, it'll be myself, Felix, and Doc.
Hey, you know, it's funny you talk about matchmaking, so and it making sense and it meshing together like you want it to. So I remember in the book, and I never even realized this, you mentioned the Dallas TV numbers during that time period being a 15 to 16, I guess, rating. And then Raw, usually nowadays, let's just say on average or a good night, a 3.0. So I found those numbers to be strikingly amazing, to know that the Dallas TV numbers during that time for World Class, when it came on in that hour, a 15 to 16 for wrestling, that's incredible.
Yeah, and that's the thing you miss about the territory days, because it wasn't just Dallas. I mean, there were other areas of the country that did similar kind of numbers.
Mid-South, where I was at.
Yeah, they were so it's like watching your, you know, that Dallas Cowboys. If you're a football fan, if you're from Dallas and you watch the Dallas Cowboys, you know,
right,
that's your team, you know, and that mm-hmm. that's what you're emotionally invested in, you know.
You might, right, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, it doesn't matter where you're from. If you're from New Orleans and you're a Saints fan, you feel the same way there. You know, and
yeah.
it's that's one of the things that I really miss about the territories as well. You know, is the fact that you did have that regional pride and that regional angle that made the people there a lot more, I think, invested in what was going on and cared a lot more about what happened and the people the wrestlers and competitors that were there, and that's why those numbers were so great. You know, I mean, that plus, you know, I mean, there wasn't as much competition for entertainment either in those days. So there's a lot of factors involved, but still, you know, that's pretty amazing to have that kind of viewership every week. You know, every week,
People
didn't miss it. And you know, even when we were, even after the world class days and the global days and all, mm-hmm. we were doing fives and sixes then, and that which was, you know, still pretty good. I think the day we closed down, we had like a six or something like that that week. That you know, so it's a different world. You know,
I talked to you're talking about the global days. So Rod and I, when I talked to him on the podcast, we talked a little bit about global too, because that was actually the first time I had heard of him or saw him on TV, and I was telling him, yeah, I'm like, I would go home from school and turn on ESPN, and that way I could watch Global. So he was saying, he goes, you know, to say that was a downtime for, I guess, the territories as they were coming to an end, he said, man, the fans were still packing in the sportatorium. He's like, we still had decent crowds. And then I talked to I also interviewed Del Wilkes, the Patriot, earlier this month, and he said the same thing. He goes, it was still magical. He goes, the sportatorium was still drawing. We were doing good.
It was those were good days. I'm actually pretty proud of the global days. You know, it was an extension of the world class days, but we did a lot of things then that introduced a lot of people to the wrestling business and to the wrestling fans that, you know, have gone on to be pretty big stars. You know, so
that roster was tremendous.
We had a lot of young guys, a lot of experienced guys, you know, and you know, guys like Rod who were in their prime. You know, I don't know if Rod told you the story or not, but the first time I met him, a friend of mine, Larry Dwyer, called me and he said, you know, I've been introduced to this guy from California. He moved down here with his folks. His dad was a preacher.
Uh-huh.
Living out on the lake, and he said, he looks great. He said, you know, I'll try to find him a place to work. So we actually took him to Tim Brooks's place. Tim was running a promotion. At the Longhorn Ballroom, and doing a little TV there, local TV, and so we took him there, and I actually got in the ring and Larry wrestled him. Did like a kind of a pseudo match right there, just to let the killer, you know, see what Rod could do, and the killer hired him right on the spot. And of course, eventually, you know, I helped push and push and push, and we got him at the sportatorium with world class at that time. But I've been involved with Rod ever since he came to Texas, and of course we great friends. You know, I took him to Japan the first time he ever went over there, and we still talk to this day. You know, he's like a younger brother to me actually, and one of the guys that if things had gone the way they should have gone, and he'll tell you this too. He made his own mistakes, but if all things were right, he would have been a big star.
I agree.
That could have, should have been. And it's a shame he never got that opportunity to really show himself. He had incredible talent.
I was talking to someone and I said he was underrated. And I don't mean underrated as far as, you know, people in the wrestling business. They know his value. I mean, like fans, your average fan does not realize how good Rod Price is.
Yeah.
So they don't.
You could have, when Rod was in his prime, when he was working, You could have put him in the ring with anybody in the business. I mean, anybody in the business, and in a main event, and it'd have been knocks out, lights out. I mean, it didn't matter who it was. I don't care. You know, I don't care who you're talking about.
Yeah, he. I got actually. It's funny. I guess I'll call them name guys. You know, of notable recognition, like a Chris Adams or a Tommy Rogers, or the people that I crossed paths with on the indies. You know, that had gone somewhere in the wrestling business. I worked with Rod probably more than any of them, and the guy was so good. He would just lead you around and take you under his wing, and the thing is, like, in his heart, he's a real good person. That's the other part.
Oh yeah. Like I said, he's like
heart of gold.
A younger brother to me. You know, that's why I wrote that chapter in the book about him. You know, I get asked about Rod almost as much as anybody, because they went over about this guy that people talk about that was so good that nobody knew, you know, you know, that kind of thing. And that was the point of that chapter. You know, here's a guy that some of you may not know and may not have ever gotten a chance to see, but he was as good as anybody at that time. And this is part of the reason why you never got to see him, you know? And,
yeah.
that was a part of it.
It was a incredible chapter. I mean, you know, knowing him so well, I probably read that one around the third. I skipped ahead and read that one after I got to like chapter three or four or something. I was like, I got to read this. And then I'm like, wow, that's it's just reading that and just thinking, I'm like, he should have got a break. It didn't happen. He was actually my very first guest when I started doing the show. I had to bring him on, and and he's like, he tells me that I'll get you anybody I can get on the phone, and they'll be on your show. I'm like, all right, Rod, I appreciate it. And then the next name I came up with, I was like, I need you to get me James Beard. He's like, oh yeah, I know he'll do it. I'm like, okay.
Absolutely.
That was another remarkable chapter. So anyone who's listening and keeping track of this, you know, we got the Chris Adams chapter, we got the Rod Price chapter. And then I got into someone that I never met, but, you know, I was amazed that you writing the chapter was Gary Hart. And when I say about the writing of the chapter was, you as a fan and a kid, you know, when I saw Gary Hart, he was this, you know, rough, you know, tough, you know, heel that, you know, nobody liked. But your stories that you tell about him, although he was tough, how smart he was, and he sounded like he was a really good person all the way around, and he had this outstanding wrestling mind.
Absolutely, yeah. He was just as street smart and street tough as the image was. But at the same time, if you knew him personally, he was one of the most, soft-spoken, easygoing guys that you never want to be around. He had two sons that he just doted over. I mean, you know, he took care of them he's just a great guy and so smart. I mean, I learned so much from Gary, and I still, you know, to this day, you know, when I'm in the ring or when I'm working, you know, booking things or putting together a match or whatever, I still go back to what would Gary do, what would Gary say, and a lot of that comes from him.
That's incredible. Actually, it's funny you talk. I'm bringing him up too because when I had Rod on, some of the feedback I got on the show was Rod mentioned Gary Hart's name, and I never asked him any questions about him. So my listeners started sending me hate mail saying, "Why didn't you ask him more about how Gary Hart was personally?" And I just was like, "Well, I just was trying to get him to tell his story, but I'll be glad to bring Rod back on and let him talk about Gary Hart because I know he'll be glad to do it." Gary Hart sounded like he was an amazing person.
Yeah, he had his moments in the business with certain people that he had to get a little rough with. But
I've read some stories about that. Yeah,
he would do that if he had to. And that was a last resort for him. But he'd stand his ground. You know, he would do that. But at the same time, I've seen him walk into situations that were tense. you know, or somebody, this guy's upset or that guy's upset or both of them are upset, and Gary'd find a way to smooth things over and, you know, like a big brother talking to him, that kind of thing. He was just he's just a good guy. You know, I don't know how to put it any other way. He's just a good guy and a great friend. I really yeah. miss him to this day.
I would actually love to get a hold of his book, but I hear there was only one, like, print copy, and now to buy it on, like, Amazon, it's over $1,000.
Yeah, they're it's incredible. I was given a book, a copy, early on because I kind of helped out with the book a little bit, and I think I bought one just because I'm to give to a friend that maybe when
yeah.
it first came out, but I've got that book is on my nightstand, and it's been there except for a period of time when I let a friend of mine borrow it for a while and read it. Other than that, it's been on my nightstand. I see it first. That's the first thing I see every morning when I wake up.
I bet there's a ton of tremendous stuff in that book that's just incredible about that era of time.
Yeah.
And that's unreal. Wow, I wish they would find a way to get it in print where, you know, they could have a, you know, because I'm telling you, I think I looked at it one time on Amazon, and I want to say I saw it for like $800 or $900, something
yeah,
incredible.
Yeah, that's incredible, incredible.
That's unbelievable. So I do want to ask you about this. There's a chapter in the book about you and just being a referee, and I loved this chapter because you talk about so many things that what I saw when I was working indies, what was wrong. Refereeing 101. I'm flipping through it now. You talked about
yeah.
a few things that just struck me like gold. Go ahead. I don't mean to cut you off. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. That actually came from, I was asked by, I don't know if you're familiar with the Spam website and Spam magazine, that they're out of Canada.
Yeah, I've seen it before. I have.
Yeah, they're pretty highly thought of, you know, and they asked me to write an article about refereeing back, oh, it's been over a decade ago now. And that chapter of the book came from that article that I wrote. I made a few modifications and added a few things and that kind of thing. But for the most part, that's my take on how refereeing should go, how it should be in professional wrestling, which is not anything at all the same as refereeing football or basketball or baseball and that kind of thing. It's a different deal.
Right.
And you know, that was one of the things that I wanted to make the point that, you know, if you're one of those people who think a great referee is a guy you never notice, well, then he's not a great wrestling referee, because a wrestling referee is part of telling the story.
Yes.
It's difference in overshadowing the guys and being the guy who kind of accentuates and supports and kind of like the supporting actor, I guess. But at the same time, if you're invisible as a professional wrestling referee, then you're not doing your job.
A referee in wrestling is like equivalent to a very, very good supporting actor, I guess, if you
yeah.
were to compare it to like
yeah.
a movie, because got to play a critical part of it. And that's what I really liked about that, because you were really stern in some of those things. Like there was one, quote in the book. It's something like you talked about being an enforcer and being physical as a referee. I actually, like when I read that, I'm like, I really like that, because most of the time I was working indies, I was a heel. And, you know, if I was doing something I shouldn't, I want the ref to you know, because I'm not supposed to touch him. I want the ref to know that, you know, get in my face and tell me. I mean, don't hit me. But, you know, get in my face and tell me that what you're going to freaking, you know, call this match or do your thing if I'm doing something I shouldn't be, or the heel is doing something he shouldn't be. And I like that, because, the word you used was enforcer, and I thought that was a really good way to put it.
Well, you know, that's one of the basic things about wrestling is heat. You know, and if you're going to have an emotional investment in what's going on in the ring by fans, then they've got to care. And
right.
And part of that is having you know, the good versus evil type scenario, or you know, the guy who's trying to maybe take a shortcut or get around the rules and that kind of thing. And if you don't have a guy in there who's trying to enforce the rules, then what are you getting around? What's the point?
Right.
You know, if you can't get, you cannot get heat without that. That's part of the
right.
That's part of the problem with the business today is the rules mean nothing. When they do have rules, they're not consistent, and they're not consistent from this. You watch this match, and it means one thing.
Yes.
It may mean something else or not mean anything at all. And that's part of the problem that the fans cannot relate to that because they can't understand what it is that a guy's supposed to be doing or not doing. You know, if you watch football, football fans know what the rules are.
Right.
They may argue a call. They may not like the way a referee calls makes one call or thinks he misses this or that or the other, but they know what the rules are. And they know when a guy gets away with something. And if a guy gets away with something, he gets heat. And that's what wrestling is about. And you know, without rules, you can't get heat. It's just that simple. And without a good referee, without a referee who understands how to allow a heel to have the opportunity, I'll put it that way, to get heat, then you don't have anything. And I was one of those guys that I just didn't turn my head. I wasn't one of those guys who would just look stupid and look the other way. I was one of those guys who, if you would pay attention to what I'm doing, and I would give you an opportunity to do what you needed to do without putting the heat on me.
Right.
You know, I use the example, you know, like there's this typical thing that a lot of heels would do, you know, they'd point to the back of their head, and like, you know, he's pulling my hair, and then the referee would go around and look at the back of his head, and then he'd do something to the baby face. Well, to me, I would tell guys, I said, listen, you know, don't do that to me because I'm not going to buy it. If you give me a chance, if you'll just pay attention to me, give me a chance, I'll work my way in a position where you can do that and get away with it without making me look stupid.
Exactly.
There's a way to do everything, and a way to do everything right, and a way to do everything wrong, and there's a cheap way and there's a real way. And my way was always tried to be do it the real way. I got a lot of guys that kid me, you're making me work for my heat. I'm going like, really? no kidding. That's exactly what I'm doing, because if you're working for it, that the fans out there can perceive that fact that you're actually having to do something to get it, and they're getting mad at you. They're not mad at me. And that's
it's like, you know what, you said something just now about that, you know, making them work for it, and then you as a trained professional would put yourself in position to where they could take advantage of it so that you don't look stupid. And you make the point in your book that I saw this way too much on the indies. Being the promoter's, you know, friend doesn't make you a ref. That's the type of stuff that the promoter's friend, who's not a, you know, trained professional, doesn't do. Putting themselves in position where it makes you not look stupid. It makes you still look like the professional that you are. And it allows them to get the heat that they're trying to get.
That's why you need three professionals in the ring, not just two.
Exactly. I agree.
Two good wrestlers can have a reasonably good match without a good referee, but a good referee can help them have a great match if they know how to work.
You're right.
You know, that was the point of that whole chapter. I wanted people to understand that it's not just about putting on a pair of, you know, a striped shirt and getting in the ring and not getting in the way and maybe even making them count at the right time. There's a lot more to it than that. And the ones that understand that and know how to do that and know how to do it well make a difference in a match. They make a match better than it would have been otherwise. And that's always my point. When I step into a ring, my goal is to make that match a little bit better than it might have been otherwise. And if I can do that, then I've done my job.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think you nailed it. I read that chapter, and it was everything that I could have imagined that someone that was a professional like you, you know, would have lived by. As you know, I could put it this way: as I read that, I could see everything that you did in the ring and why you were successful and why you had such a long run during that time frame. I mean, there's no other way to say it. It's actually, to me, I don't want to diminish any chapters, but like if you know, people out there that think there's nothing to a wrestling referee, they need to really read that chapter and let
you.
It sink in,
because
there's so much in it.
It's been pretty satisfying to me that a lot of very good referees have told me that very thing. You know, and they'll tell me, you know, if they'll tell the guys, the other younger referees that may have had something to do with it. He said, you know, if you'll go back, if you don't buy that book for any other reason, just buy that book and read that chapter. You know, and that'll tell you something. So that, you know, that means a lot to me. You know, the guys who I respect and have known in the business as good referees would say that sort of thing, because those of us who really tried to take some pride in what we did understand that those things are all important.
I saw a few veterans like back in the day, you know, with, I guess, untrained referees in the ring, that they would be asked to ref, get pretty heated at the ref backstage, because the ref didn't know what they were doing. So,
wrestlers are usually the worst referees in the world. That was always one of my pet peeves. You know, they'd bring in a special referee for this match or that match, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, if you don't have a referee on your staff who's really capable of handling a match like that, then what does that say about things? You know, to me, you'd want to put the best referee you've got in the most high profile, the best match you've got.
That's a real good point.
Somebody in who's not a trained referee, who's not, you know, I don't care who he is. I don't care if he's the greatest wrestler in the world. That doesn't make him a great referee. And you bring him in there now, if you bring a guy in just as an enforcer, that's one thing. But if you bring him in to actually referee a match and try to put it over that means something, to me, that's a bunch of, you know. And if you noticed, when I was in charge in Dallas, we didn't do that. If there was a high profile match, generally I got in the ring myself, or you know, John Keaton or somebody I trusted, you know.
That's true. I don't ever remember during that time period. No, you're right. I don't ever remember anything where, you know, they brought in the special,
That's a good point. That's why, because I, you know, if it was ever brought up, I'd go, my point would be, you know, why are you doing that? That's an insult to me.
That makes sense. Like you said, because if you're the professional, why aren't you good enough to be able to handle that situation?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
No, I couldn't agree more. If you're an aspiring referee nowadays, you really need to read that. Or if you're one of these people who just works indies and never has been trained, and that's something you need to read, and along with getting trained, because that's incredible. That chapter, I swear, I read through it. It just resonated with me because I just remember running across different referees in the indies that had never really taken a bump in their life or had really had any training. They were just, like you said, literally, like the book said, the promoter's buddy or friend or relative, and they just threw a shirt on them and sent them out there.
And I made it really easy. It's a pretty long chapter, but at the end of it, I did, you know, kind of a
the points
of it, you know,
yeah.
One, two, three, four, five, six. These are the things you need to think about. So if you're not into reading details, then at least you can read that part of it and maybe get something from it.
I totally agree, James. I totally agree. And like I said, anybody who I've ever met, I mean, Rod was the first one that I met that really said your name, but just over the years, you know, they always, when it comes to, I guess you call yourself the king of the master of refereeing, your name always would be mentioned. I mean, bottom line.
That means a lot.
Yep. So we talked a little bit about the Sportatorium. I was telling you the very first time. I never worked at the Sportatorium. What happened was I was in Dallas in the late 90s on a business trip for my job, and actually went to the Sportatorium that one night. And I'll never forget pulling up to it and just thinking to myself, So that's the World Famous Sportatorium I used to watch on TV as a kid.
Yeah.
And Rod Price had always told me at that point, he goes, brother, he's got that voice. He goes, brother, it's not what you think it is. So
yeah.
Well, I'll never forget. I've heard the stories, but that was an incredible place.
It was an amazing place. It had a feel and an atmosphere that you can't manufacture it. It just was what it was. And then, you know, I don't remember now if it's a chapter, but it's in one of the chapters that describes this sportatorium about as well as I can describe it. You know, and it wasn't a free place. It was, you know, it was cold in the winter and hot in the summer, and there was nothing fancy about it at all. But my goodness, what an atmosphere it had. It was just incredible.
Yeah. You could see it. I mean, it came through the TV. I bet.
I can only imagine. It was an incredible place to shoot TV. I mean, it just looked great on television. You know,
it did.
I'm sure a lot of people like yourself who went there for the first time, you know, after seeing it on TV, probably expected something different. But if you just forgot that and walked in there and sat down in one of those suits and watched wrestling, there's no way. I mean, the smell, you know, the smell of the popcorn and the French fries and the beer and the, you know, I mean, it, good God, it was just incredible. I don't know how to describe it other than that. And I still miss it every Friday. I think about, you know, going to the sportatorium.
So Dale Wilkes said the same thing you just said. Rod Price said the same thing you just said. I'm hoping to talk to more guys from that era on my show that I know they're going to say the same thing. I've read numerous stories about it. I heard Percy Pringle, he was on some documentary one time talking about the French fries, at the place.
Yeah. they were horribly greasy, but they were so good. kind of like a Jack in the Box taco. I mean, there's something about it that, you know, it's horrible for you, but my goodness, it's good.
That's amazing.
And the thing about it is that it had such an atmosphere and such an aura and such a history that WCW came in there and ran one of their shows there.
I remember reading that.
Yeah, they absolutely did, and I was in discussions with Bruce Pritchard and with WWF at the time. They wanted to come in and do a Raw there, but we just couldn't work it out. But they wanted to do that, and the reason they wanted to do it is because of history. You know, they had guys there that wanted to say they worked at the sportatorium.
It's an amazing place. I mean, just to see that place. Can you tell me a little bit about that, about when they were deciding it to be torn down? Because I firmly believe if I would have had the money, I would have loved to buy it and made millions after.
I mean, there was a lot of talk that it should have been made a historical marker, and it really probably if it had been taken care of better, it should have been. But I went there just before they tore it down and lifted a couple of things for souvenirs. But
yeah,
it was in horrible shape. I mean, a bunch of homeless people had been living there, and it had a fire in it at one time, and it was just trashed out. It was horrible. But really, if it had been reasonably preserved, it should have been. You know, if the people who actually owned the building had taken any kind of care of it at all, then it would have been an incredible historic marker and maybe even a place that they could have renovated and done something with. It would have cost a lot of money, but it's just a historical place, you know, and I think that people would have wanted to go there.
I can envision it being some type of museum. I don't know. I just just to think of the history there and everything that happened in that place.
Yeah, it's really a shame. It's really a shame that they couldn't have done something to preserve it in some way. And you know, it was, like I said, it was in horrible condition when I went there just before I tore it down, and it almost made me cry, really. I mean, it's just sad.
Yeah, I guess when you see it in that condition after knowing, because you stand there, I can imagine someone like you who stood in the center of that ring for so many years, and the amount of people that walk down the aisles, not the amount, but the quality of people that walk down the aisles, for you to stand there and then see it in its ruins, so to say, is like, I could see how it'd be heartbreaking.
Yeah, it really was, and still is. You know, when I saw a picture of Bill Anderson, a friend of mine from who worked in California, back in during my era, I guess. He had making kind of a run through Dallas, and he made a picture of himself standing out in the middle of the pasture where the Ford Forum used to be. You know, and that was just this week. You know. And I've known a lot of other people who have done that very same thing, and
they
tell you what it means to people everywhere, you know.
That's you think about that concept, the fact that someone would drive there to an empty field with just nothing but grass and take a picture there. Think about what that means.
Yeah.
Like if you really consider that, like people are actually driving to that place, they'll take a picture with the Dallas skyline in the back sometimes, and they'll take a picture of just them standing in an open grass field. That's amazing.
Right.
That
yeah.
ought to tell you the historicalness of it.
Yeah, I may do it myself someday.
I may too. My wife might look at me like I'm crazy, but I could see myself doing that.
Yeah, we're all a little crazy.
Yeah, you got that right. So, James, I just one other thing. Are you doing okay on time?
Yeah, I'll probably need to hook a mirror in a few minutes, but I'm good right now.
Okay. No, I'm getting ready to wrap everything up. So there was one thing you said at the beginning of the book that really caught my attention, and I don't have the exact quote, but you had mentioned something about, the Von Erich boys being underpaid, I guess, whether it was initially, or they weren't as highly paid, it sounded like, as one might think they would be as the stars of the promotion.
And if you read, you didn't get to read Gary Hart's book, so Gary touches on that very thing too.
Oh, okay, okay.
The fact is, as much business as they brought in and the work that they actually had toward the promotion, you know, and all, they actually didn't get what you might think they would have gotten at the time based on the value of their being a part of it. And
gotcha.
That was one of the things, one of the points that Gary made in his book. You know, a lot of people think that they just got all this money, you know, but Fritz kind of kept them under thumb a little bit. And that was one of the ways he did that. And on one hand, I can kind of understand that. You know, but at the same time, you realize that they probably had a little resentment toward that too, you know, and that's one of the reasons why sometimes they were a little out of control, and you know, maybe kind of mucking the system a little bit, but
what do you do when you're a young when you're a young man, you know, I think we all go through a bit of a rebellious period, and I can,
yeah,
I can see how
you
that
know,
would.
Kevin himself told me one time, though, that, you know, he said, you know, we got too much too soon and didn't know how to handle it. And then, basically, I don't know that's the exact words, but that's pretty much kind of what he said. He and I rode together a lot at one time, and I really got to know him pretty well during that period of time, and just the two of us riding, you know, and we talked a lot about those kinds of things, and that was one of the things that stuck with me that he said, you know, that he felt like part of the problem was is that you know, they were awfully young and didn't know how to handle what they had, so you know, maybe Fritz was, you know, maybe he was smarter than we thought, or maybe he had a reason behind that. But at the same time, you know, I can understand how the boys would be a little resentful of that.
Yeah, you know, it, when you're a parent, I guess you're trying to be protective, and that was a way of trying to be protective. So we all live and we learn, right? There's decisions we make,
absolutely.
And 20 years later, you, But no, James, that's all I got. I just want to tell all my listeners on the podcast, go out and check out and get James's book. It's called The Third Man. It's My Life and Times Inside the Ring and Out, and it's almost 300 pages of just wonderful stuff from the world-class era, Sportatorium. We didn't even scratch the surface of everything he talks about in the book, and you really just should go out and get it, because if you were a wrestling fan during that era, even if you don't watch wrestling now, if you were a wrestling fan during that era and like pro wrestling, you want to read this because it's excellent. I mean, James touched he was in the ring with so many people. So no problem, James.
I'm really blessed to have had the opportunity to work with so many great professionals, and you know, I appreciate you mentioning the book and promoting it, and you know, if the people want to get it, you can go to jamesbeardbook.com and find it online, or you can go to Amazon and you can get a hard copy, or you can get a Kindle version if you want to, and if I ever run into you, if you buy one, and just bring it to me, and I'll be glad to sign it.
Yeah. Matter of fact, it's funny you say that, because when I bought it, Amazon gave me the option to, I guess, download the preview Kindle version. So
right, yeah.
I was able to pull up like the first, I think, chapter or two on my iPad. I was waiting for it to come in.
Yeah. Yeah, you can get it either way, print or electronic, and I'm pretty proud of the fact that it's been so well received, and I appreciate the interest.
All right, Booking the Territory fans, hopefully you enjoyed that conversation with myself and James Beard. Right now, like I said, I'm going to throw it over to myself and Doc Turner, and Felix Olmedo jumps in maybe about 5 to 10 minutes into it, where Felix, like I said, is the founder of Pipe Bomb Radio. It's a pro wrestling podcast that Felix had me on last week. Felix has been doing this for some time, so he was kind enough to have me on his show. So I asked him to join ours as we reviewed the SummerSlam results in Monday Night Raw. Doc, myself, and Felix, we're going to take the Twitter and Facebook questions. So tune in, sit back, kick back, and hopefully you enjoy that. Also, make sure, send us your questions and thoughts, man. We'll read them on air. I promise you. I'll try to get to them. With that being said, let's throw it over to the review portion.
All right, BTT, Booking the Territory fans. I got myself, Doc Turner. We're going to sit there and book this territory tonight. Appreciate y'all tuning in, as always. Hey, I just want to give a big shout out before we get rolling to Nate Milton from Live Audio Wrestling's Review and Impact, from Pipe Bomb Radio, and from the Kings of Sport. Nate gave us multiple shout outs. As y'all know, Nate was a guest of mine a few weeks ago, and I really appreciate Nate coming on, talking some wrestling with me. And we just really appreciate Nate giving us all the plugs. So Nate, I appreciate it if you're tuning in, man. Thanks again. Thanks for all of your help. So Doc, let's just go ahead and jump and get started. We might have a guest join us tonight, so we'll see if he's able to hop on with us. But if not, let's go ahead and get started with what we got, because we got a bunch of stuff to run through related to SummerSlam and Raw. Not as many comments as much as we got actual statements or just thoughts from our listeners. But the first thing I want to get to, with all that being said, is your buddy Adam from Facebook sent in some more stuff for us to discuss this week.
I'm sure it's high quality as usual.
Of course, you know, because we value our listeners even if they don't like us sometimes. So, yeah, Adam sent us something, and Adam says again, let me remind the fans. So last week Adam's question was, I think John Cena should win the world title at SummerSlam. If he does, what happens to the U.S. title? Well, Doc didn't really like that. So, Doc, go ahead and recap what you told Adam last week, because minus the curse words. Can we go a little bit softer this week? I mean, you don't need to call him a no-good MF-er.
Something about taking the belt, shining it up, lubing it up, and shoving it up his ass.
Okay, really you didn't have to go there, but okay. So, with that being said, Adam followed up with another question, and Adam's question this week to you is, so John Cena lost. what do they do with the U.S. title genius, and why is Doc such an asshole? So you care to comment on that? Because like, he's question, not talking to me. He's talking to you.
No, he's not. That question is not to me. It would say, if it was to me, it would say, why are you such an asshole? He's asking somebody
okay.
else why.
Well, Adam, Doc's just an ass. He's an idiot. He's somebody who thinks he knows about wrestling, and he's pretty much riding my coattails on his show, and that's all it boils down to. So I got you back, Adam. Man, keep submitting those questions, and Doc can stick.
Let me help you, because he had a question in there. But first of all, let me tell you, maybe I'm an asshole because I have to deal with people like Adam all day. It's the same reason why I drink beer. It's to numb myself down and slow myself down, so that I can get down to everybody else's level. So with that being said, let's talk about the U.S. title. What do they do with it now?
Oh, you go ahead. Book the territory, genius. You know it all on every show.
It's not going up Adam's ass, so we got to figure out something to do with this thing. I heard that he's – hey, if you're just going to lay out on me, I can do the whole show myself.
Go ahead. I mean, go ahead. Book it so that we can get to the more important stuff of the show.
I heard that Rollins is going to start defending it twice in a show like Jay Lethal, so I guess they're going to just start ripping off all of the ROH's storylines.
That ain't what they're doing. He's fighting Sting at, what's that, the next pay-per-view. So
Night of Champions. Keep up.
Yeah, Night of Champions. I can't. I gotta worry about you too much to sometimes remember everything I'm supposed to remember. Okay. With that being said, we'll come back to that in a little while. I gotta get through a bunch of thoughts that we had from the listeners this week, because we had a ton of stuff as I was live tweeting doing SummerSlam this weekend.
It really was.
So I'm just going to run through a bunch of these before we get into the questions, because it's funny. Facebook, we got all the questions this week, but Twitter, we got all the, I guess you would call them, just statements or thoughts and comments. So I'm going to run through them, give everybody a shout-out that said something. So we did get one prediction comment on Facebook that said, hold on, and where is it at? Okay, so Darren on Facebook, when I said, hey, give us your predictions, Darren said, Taker wins, setting up a third match at WrestleMania in Taker's home state. That may actually still come to be true, as messed up as the finish was. Something happens in the Cena-Rollins match where both champions keep their titles. That did not happen, although something funny did happen, although, you know, we know Rollins won. And then Cesaro beats Owens, New Day regains the title. So Darren was right on some things, but in the end, he probably was about half and half. So that was the only one we got on Facebook.
Hey, that's 2 for 4 for him. That's 50%. Now, that won't get you a high school diploma, but it'll make you millions in the major leagues. So good job.
Okay. Next, let me run through the Twitter thoughts. So at Soulstormer, our friend Soulstormer says, in response to me asking what was your favorite match of the night or matches and least favorite, Soulstormer says, my favorite was Cena versus Rollins, and I wasn't impressed with Owens versus Cesaro match. We got at Brate the Great says, I knew there was no way, in response to just SummerSlam in general, I knew there was no way Owens would lose again. I had all of the matches correct except for Rollins and Rollins and Cena. I'm reading this wrong. I had all the matches correct except for Rollins and Cena, and the Rusev Ziggler stupidity double DQ. Well, you and I will touch on that in a minute. At Cordell Kevin says, in response to who wins versus Owens and Cesaro, this was the predictions, for the love of God, I hope it's Owens. Well, it was Owens on that one, Cordell
Kevin. Me too.
Kevin. Yeah, you ain't lying about that. And then he says, I really don't want to see him lose again. He was referring to Owens. Cordell Kevin also says, with the New Day winning, I want to see New Day versus Enzo and Big Cass from NXT. That's what's best for business. Man, that would be incredible. Now, hold on, Doc. Before you say anything, that was before the Dudleys popped up on Monday Night Raw. So let's just say
what's best for business has now changed.
Right, and we got some questions on Facebook about that. We're gonna get to that. So that's what's best for business, and you're right, that probably did change, even though you're still an ass. He also says, all I can say after tonight is can't wait to see New Day versus the Dudleys, going to be awesome. Also, only Heyman can turn a bad finish into amazing TV. Believe that. LMAO, great opening Raw segment. So that was at Kevin Cordell also Monday night responding to the Raw stuff that went on Raw. So again, not a question, but comments and thoughts. Next, we got at Sean Running 72. He picked, man, this dude was on a roll when I was live tweeting. I mean, he was picking all the new ones. I mean, picking all the right ones. He goes, so he picked New Day. He picked Rollins. He picked Cesaro, so he was wrong on that one. He picked Lesnar. I'm going to say he was almost right on that one, but technically wrong. He picked Stephen Amell and Neville. He picked Wyatt and Harper. He picked Ziggler, and then he picked Miz and Sheamus. So the Ziggler one I throw out. The Miz, I asked him, I was like, Miz? He was like, yeah, I don't know why he picked that one. And then he picked Sheamus. So he actually had a bunch of those right. I got to give Sean Running 72 some credit. He got a lot of those right. Hold on, Doc. I got a couple more of these to get through, and then we'll get to the questions. At Jen underscore McCreath, in response to me posting about Stephen Amell and Neville. I made a tweet about that. She said the match was better than I expected, giving Amell credit for doing good. So many great workers left off the card, such as Swagger, Ryder, Adam Rose, Fandango, Mark Henry. Basically, what she was saying was, you're giving this spot to a superhero slash, you know, what do you want to call it, movie star.
Hollywood actor.
You got it. Yeah, Hollywood actor. There you go. Then we got a last one on Twitter, at Sean Oxford 31. In response to favorite slash least favorite match, the favorite match for me was Taker Lesnar, although didn't like the finish, and my least favorite was Rusev Ziggler. I'd have to agree. I agree with Rusev Ziggler because I was really looking forward to that, and they, you know, did that double deal. That being said, Doc, let's touch on a few of the. Hey, is that Felix?
Felix.
I knew he would join. He's just running late. Hey, Felix, is that you?
Yeah, that's me. Sorry about that. I'm just kind of finishing up on some things and didn't realize what time it was. I'm like, uh-oh.
That's all right, man. Hey, we're running live. I'm actually about to get into the good stuff. So I know you haven't met my my buddy Doc Turner, but Doc Turner's on with me. And we're just running through the Twitter stuff that we got, Facebook stuff, and then we're about to kind of somewhat go through the SummerSlam card, just give our real quick thoughts on that so we can get to our Facebook questions that we got.
Sure. Fine.
All right. So I'm going to throw it to Doc, and then and I'll, you know, we'll do it kind of like the roundtable we did on your show last week, if you're cool with that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. So, Doc, I'll throw this one at you first. Sheamus and Orton, just kind of a real quick synopsis. You know, Sheamus wins clean with the brogue kick. I know you weren't really looking forward to that one, and neither was I. What do you think? I mean, given just, you know, were you kind of meh on it? You know, if we do that 1 to 10 scale after you've known the outcome, because we didn't know the outcome when we previewed last week, on a 1 to 10 scale, 10 being you really cared about it, 1 being you didn't give 2 you know what. What did you think about that one?
3. And here's why. I've said this before, and I'll keep saying it. These two guys can be interesting, and they can be interesting to me, but not together because I'm tired of it. So there you go.
I hear you. Felix, what about you? Sheamus and – what did you think of the Sheamus-Orton match? On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being great, 1 being you just really didn't care.
I'm just glad it was – it basically kicked off the show. And that's about all I would say. I'd be glad about it. I mean, I didn't expect Sheamus to come out the winner. Honestly, I expected it to be a replay of what happened at WrestleMania. Orton defeats Sheamus, and then Sheamus came back and would have cashed in the Money in the Bank, but –
yeah,
it was a good ending as far as the world title match goes. But the Sheamus Randy Orton, I'll go with a -2.
-2. Ooh, hey, that's a new one, dude. You just set the mark, man. We've never gone into the negatives. I like that. Yeah, I had saw some reports, like some people, you know how it gets on like Twitter and Facebook. People are going, oh, there's rumors circling around. He's gonna cash in. I'm so glad they didn't do that with that. I really was. So, you know, I'm glad negative two. I actually probably can agree with that, even though I really wouldn't rate it that. I'd probably rate it a two. It was all right. I mean, I'm not going to complain about it. Like I said on your show, I like those two guys. I just think there's more they can do with them.
Yeah.
So next we had, and I'm not going in any particular order. This is just the order I have it listed in. New Day, Primetime Players, Lucha Dragons, Los Matadores. New Day wins, as we all know, which actually I don't know if I want to review so much actually that match as much as I want to ask, Doc, what are your thoughts? Because we do have a Facebook question about this. What are your thoughts about them and now it looks like to be the Dudleys?
Man, I'm excited. I would say I was a 7 or 8 with New Day getting the titles. But now, with the Dudleys coming out to that tremendous pop last night and working them over, I got to give that a 9 or a 10 just because, you know, not only do you have the Dudleys on the scene, but New Day last night on Raw with the trombone and every, you know, our ongoing infatuation with just their ability to make lemonade out of lemons. They took a baby face gimmick, got it heel, and got heel so good now they're back to being baby faces. The real question is, how are they going to get either them or the Dudleys to be the heel? Which, hey, I think Bubba can heel out with the best of them, so they can figure that out. But I think we have some very, very interesting times ahead, especially if they throw some twosome from the Wyatt family into the tag team division now with that big hoss that came on last night. The tag team division could be really, really interesting, and it's been pretty interesting for the past couple of months as it is.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it's been interesting. I mean, it's not great. Don't get me wrong. I grew up in an era of great tag teams like we all did, but I think the tag team division has been okay. Felix, I'll throw the same thing at you. One, kind of rate that match from SummerSlam, and then two, after you do that, what do you think about it going forward with what it looks like to be possibly maybe a storyline with them and the Dudleys?
Well, as far as the match goes, I mean, I pretty much called it Tuesday that they have so much momentum on their side right now. Whether you love them, whether you hate them, point being is people are talking about them. And
yep.
That's the point. I mean, obviously, if you're talking about them, it means they're doing something right. So
that's right.
They needed that win. The Primetime Players weren't really given much to do. They won the titles, and then the next day, okay, yeah, now what? It's like,
mm-hmm.
Okay. It's like almost like a, well, that happened. All right. Okay, next day. What now? Anyway.
Yeah.
As far as the next part of your question, it was a definite surprise. Not many people knew, if anybody knew, really. And it's very a rarity to be able to surprise anybody these days, especially the
mm-hmm.
internet wrestling community, because they seem to know everything. Just ask them, they'll tell you. But,
you know,
as far as the Dudleys coming back, it's a definite great welcome. It's a change. It's something different. It's something fresh, something we hadn't seen in 10 years, really. Them getting
mm-hmm.
involved into the tag team division again, I think it's a smart idea. Allows them to work with the young talent, and even Xavier was like super thrilled to be able to go through a table. He said it was one of the greatest nights of his life to do what he did on Monday and get to go through a table on to boot with the Dudleys. And then with the big boy that was just mentioned, good grief, that was that's a big boy. That's a big, powerful boy. We'll see if he get bigger. They decide to pursue anything in the tag team division, but in the meantime, the Dudleys are back. I see another title reign for these guys. How long? Who's to say? It's just nice to have them back.
Yeah, you actually went into, and I'm going to go into this because we got a question from a fan of ours, Brady, on Facebook. And you both kind of touched on this, but I'm going to read it just to give him a shout out. Do you think they brought the Dudleys back just for a few shows, or is it a long-term venture? Also, do they give them the belts? I don't know. They're on SmackDown tonight. They're going to be on Friday, so I think it's long term.
I read a deal
at least in the short term.
I read a deal just before we came on said that they signed a multi-year deal and they're planning to work house shows and TV. Now, multi-year can be 2 years, but that's quite a while in wrestling terms.
Yeah, you can do a lot with that. I agree with you, Felix. It's good to see them back completely. I've always been big fans of them, and very glad to see them back in the tag team division. I think it can only enhance what's there. The New Day are already really, really strong. I think this only makes it stronger, and I'm looking forward to seeing more. Next match, this one was a disappointment. I'll just say that to me, so I'll give it a score of 3, even though I was really looking forward to it, and it's just because of the double DQ, and that's Rusev and Ziggler. Doc, what do you rate that one just based on what happened?
Man, I hate – there's very little I hate more than agreeing with you. Maybe like, you know, world hunger and child abuse. But I'm going to agree with you and say a 3, maybe a 2. 50-50 booking, man. Somebody's got to go over. It's a pay-per-view. It's 4 hours. I need to get a pay-per-view style finish and not something that seems like a continuation of an angle that you would do on Raw or SmackDown. So I wasn't a big fan of that whatsoever.
Yeah. I think I agree.
And
Felix, would you?
Here's the other thing. It's probably gonna set up some sort of mixed tag, which automatically just lets the air out of the balloon for this for me as well.
Oh yeah, Felix, we talked about that on your show. I'm like, I don't know if I want to see that. I don't want to see that. But I'll let you chime in on Rusev Ziggler because we talked about that on Pipeline last week, and I'm looking forward to it. But I didn't know if I wanted to see the mixed tag or even Lana and Summer Rae go down the road. So what would you rate that Rusev-Ziggler match?
Match quality itself, it was a good match. As far as story, I think a lot of people were hoping, maybe not so many, maybe half and half, I would say, would like to see it done and over with. But the way that they're building it, it's just pointing to the obvious. As long as she's definitely healthy to do it and no problems physically, you're going to see Lana in a wrestling match real soon.
Oh, yeah.
And Summer Rae, she's just there, and I think it worked for her because she wasn't doing nothing. So, yeah, it'll lead to a mixed tag, most likely. And I want to say Night of Champions, but I'm not going to go there. I would say most likely Hell in a Cell, but the match over its overall itself, I go as far as saying maybe a 5.
That's a good point, Felix. Because the match, you're right. The match wasn't terrible. It was more or less the finish that you're like, ugh. But yeah. Go ahead, Doc. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
I got to tell you, Felix, man, Mike is real ready for this though, even though he's saying that he's not, because he's ready to see Summer get in the ring because that's his crush.
I had a feeling he had a thing for the blonde. I won't say that.
He's so full of crap. That's so far away from my taste. It ain't funny, but all right, we'll move on to the next one because I took a crap on this on Felix's show with the Stephen Amell Neville Stardust Barrett. I just hated it, but I'm going to say, and we even got a question for this. So while I'm telling you what I think about it, we got a question, and I'm looking for the listener who mentioned it to me. And I can't seem to find it at this second. But he did say, what did you think about the Stephen Amell Neville Stardust Barrett? So I'm going to say this. I took a crap on it on Pipe Bomb Radio on your show, Felix, because I'm just not into the whole, you know, like I said, I don't like the whole celebrity thing. However, he held his own in there, and I was actually happy with what he did. Like, I didn't like the whole idea of what they were doing, but give that guy credit. He got in there, and he didn't fail. He held his own. I thought it was good. I'm going to give, like, the overall match, like, a 7. I don't have any complaints about it. So, Doc, I'll let you kind of just, you know, give me your rating real quick on it. But I thought it was okay.
Well, I'll give it a 4, and I'm going to say if you're going to bring in somebody from the outside, he's probably a best-case scenario. If you want to put him and John Stewart and a Machine Gun Kelly all taking bumps, I'll put him at the top of the list. But I don't tune in to movies to see wrestlers, and I don't tune into wrestling to see actors. So there you go.
Yeah. Felix?
Well, here's the thing. In most past matches that included celebrities, whether you think of Jay Leno, David Arquette,
hey, that's a world champion.
But you know what I mean. As far as celebrities going, it doesn't always come over as good as they hope. It looks good on paper, but when they go out there and they see it happen, I'm like, oh, that was a As far as the match goes, you know, many people didn't – I don't think many people expected him to come out and perform as well as he did. And for what it was, the match itself, you know, he's in great shape. For you know, he's not a wrestler. You know, obviously that's obvious. But he went in there and he took the beatings. You know, he came back on his own. The match wasn't horrible and definitely was a lot better than most expected. If I were to give it a rating, you know, I'd go in between and I'd say a 6.
I agree. That's why I said 7. Let me say this. I was very surprised by how he was able to hold his own in there. I just really was. Like you said, Felix, usually you get these celebrity things, it comes off so cheesy and phony. And like at first I'm like, oh, here we go. You know, like when I first tune in and it's starting, but then it turned on me real quick. I was like, this is good. You know, the guy's in there holding his own. They didn't like overbuild him in it. They told a decent story and it was fine. It was, like I said, I give it a 7. I'm not going to sit there and complain about
it. Well, I'm also crap on it because of the fact that, you know, you think, oh, well, why bring in a celebrity? Why not give people opportunities who are not being seen on TV? That's usually the first thing people would jump to the defense about. You bring in a high-profile match for a celebrity to be part of when it could have gone to somebody else who was definitely much more worthy. But, you know, you take what you get.
Yeah, actually, we had a Twitter – we had one of our Twitter followers. That's exactly what she said. She said, there are so many other people that could have been put in that spot. That's my biggest complaint about her, basically, in a nutshell.
Yeah.
I tell you what, if we're going to book the territory, here's what I would have done. I'd have broken up that nine-woman mashup and split them up a little bit so you could see what was going on and if you're going to get rid of the celebrity match.
Yeah, common complaint. We talked about that.
We're going to get there, but nine women in a wrestling match or eight men in a wrestling match is like watching six-year-olds play soccer. So it's just, they're all around the ball kicking it.
No disagreement there. All right. We got I don't want to spend a lot of time on this. Miz, Big Show, and Ryback.
0-0-0-0-0.
Okay, Felix?
I'm just glad it was a very quick match. It didn't last very long at all. You know, I don't think nobody really invested too much emotion or time into it. It just, you know, they wanted to finish it off where they left off at Battleground when they couldn't have the match. They wanted to make sure they could have it finally. And with the way things are going, it looks like Show may be taking time away from TV again. He's just not at the level that Andre the Giant was. Andre was a spectacle. The Big Show, he's just a big guy. That's how the Giant specialty about him doesn't even jump at you anymore. And that's a shame because, in reality, he is a sight to see. He's a big man. And, you know, you'd think you'd be in awe watching him, but no, people are, like, sick to death of it, you know?
Yeah, you can't recapture that what Andre the Giant brought to the table back then.
No. I mean, as far as the match itself goes, I'm just glad it was a very quick match. And if I had to give it a rating, you know, well, considering the champ retained – I was actually kind of hoping for the Miz to take it over with, but you know it is what it is. I'll go with 1.3. How about that?
1.3. I like it, Felix. You're being unique.
I hope you get on him. Last week you got on me for saying 7.34. So
Felix took it to a new level tonight, man. He went to the negatives, man. I didn't even know that was an option. This is my own show. So next we had Reigns and Ambrose, Wyatt and Harper. We all know what happened. I just wasn't into that match. It wasn't that it was bad, just from a standpoint of being emotionally invested, like I always say, just wasn't into it. I gave it a 4.
I'm right in there too, because the problem with that is that I, and I said it last week on the show, if it's a pay-per-view, it must mean the Wyatt family's about to do the job. So at some point, they got to do. He's got to win something of some significance. And I've said this before too. I think he's hamstrung a little bit because he's trying to be this wild, you know, psychological thriller character in a corporate environment. So there's a whole lot of places I'd like to see that character go, but I don't know that they're ever going to let those rough edges get real and make it worth something I want to see.
Yeah, I hear you. Felix, what'd you think about it? I mean, just overall thoughts and ranking on it.
You know, the Bray Wyatt character is such an extraordinary character. Definitely fits in today's society as far as what people can go with it compared to, you know, what they did with Waylon Mercy from 95, 96-ish. It just didn't fit then. I mean, and obviously no offense to Danny Spivey, but I mean, it just didn't fit. He's pretty much sank. Now, He came in with such momentum with him, Rowan, and Harper, and it looked like this was going to be something pretty close to what, I mean, as dark as The Undertaker was when he started out. And it just had a great, great reaction. People loved it. It was different. It was nice. And they set up this big setup and a big setup between, let's just say, Cena or even Jericho. And ultimately, Wyatt gets destroyed. I mean, this is but put back down. He basically carried the feud between he and Undertaker at WrestleMania this year. You know, Taker wasn't there. So it was all Bray.
Yeah.
And that should tell you what kind of talent this man has. If going into this match, you know, I like the idea where he and Reigns were going, and ultimately you knew that one way or another, because Ambrose wasn't doing nothing, and Harper needed to get back into the story somehow, that they were going to do something together to continue this going, you know, this feud going. Nobody saw that the big man was going to make his debut for sure. That was obvious.
Right.
To have it at the pay-per-view, the match itself, I would go ahead and give it, I'll go with a 5. Because of the fact is that they went ahead and did it again on Raw just so they could introduce this big man. The match was okay. Wasn't the greatest. Had no real big emotional investment from the fans. I mean, don't get me wrong, the Brooklyn crowd was hot, but it just didn't go anywhere. What was the point?
It's just a continuation
of a feud that really hasn't been going anywhere.
Yeah, there's no, I'm going to go say the term I always say, I didn't have an investment in it. There was no emotion in it for me. I agree.
Hold on. You know the group, you say, I thought that was a really good analogy to the Waylon Mercy with Spivey. The group that I think could be the ceiling for the Wyatt family is Kevin Sullivan's Army of Darkness from the Florida days, where he had the satanic crew with Mark Lewin and Woman and all those. That was some wild, that was a wild ass angle down in Florida. And I know that was a different time and it was the territory time. And I know they can't go that far in today's PG corporate environment, but to me, that's the standard of where something like that ought to be headed.
I think they wanted to make the character very similar to the De Niro character from that movie he did with Nicholas Kate Fear. That's the one. They wanted to take it a little step further and make it a little more darker than Waylon Mercy's character was, and it worked. I mean, he went there, and people are still kind of wondering what the hell he's saying half the time, but it gets over. People respect it. People realize that this guy is good. This guy is really good on the mic. You can't deny that. But they ultimately set him up to fail every time. It's like, when are they going to let him to get over? That's what I'm worried
about. And they didn't capitalize. When he was, like, white hot last year, well, was it last year? It wasn't even last year. It was like, I guess it was. It's actually about a year and a half ago. When he was, like, white hot, they didn't capitalize. Like it kind of just went its course, and they didn't really capitalize on it. White hotness, I'll say. Like there was a, I went to a live show in Dallas. It was just a house show, I guess it was in maybe March or something. It was before WrestleMania of last year, not this year. And I mean, he was like just white hot. I'm trying to remember the day, but it was just white hot, man. The reaction he was getting, it was just crazy. And they didn't capitalize on that. It was like they kind of let it just go on too long. And I don't even recall how whatever storyline he was in at the time, how it ended, but it just fizzled. You know, it's just like they didn't strike while iron was hot, that old saying. Yeah. So, but no, man, that was some good thoughts on that angle, because, man, it's just the character's good. It's just, man, you got to do something with it. They got to get him involved. So I'll be anxious to see what they do going forward with what they did last night with bringing in the big guy. So next we had Cena. Let me just jump to this one. Cena versus Rollins. We all know how it went down, and we all know now what's happened on Raw. So I'll just say I thought the match was really good. The whole John Stewart thing and then what played out last night on Raw, I don't know how I feel about that. Whatever. I want to tie in one thing. I actually had a listener who, you know, since I'm Felix, I don't know you know this, but I'm kind of a Cena fan. I do like him. The listener says, I'm sure Mike Blue, this is his exact words. I'm sure Mike Blue won for his boyfriend Cena getting laid, laying out John Stewart. But so I always give our hate mail a shout out because I appreciate them listening. So Rory, thank you for that. But anyway, so Cena,
Rory, he tinkled in his pink panties. That's what he did.
So we all know what happened. Rollins got the victory. My thoughts on the match are it's an 8. Don't know how much I really like John Stewart interfering, but I understand you had to do something. Now going forward, we have Sting and Rollins in something now. So, Doc, what are your – just give me a quick – just to make sure we stay good on time, give me a quick rating on that one.
I'll give it an 8 or 9, too, for the work in the ring. I think where they went eventually is that they out-tricked themselves. And how do you know that is the next night on Raw, you bring out Ric Flair. And if you watch Rick when he's in the ring, now I'm a Flair mark, and he's my favorite wrestler of all time. He looked thoroughly confused and bewildered in the ring and didn't look comfortable. And that's the one place in the world I'm pretty sure he is comfortable. And so this angle just has got, you know, with Stewart involved, spiraled out of control into not making much sense for me. But the two guys themselves, Rollins and Cena, hey, that's the when the bell ring, bell to bell, those guys are getting it done.
Yeah, I agree. What did you think, Felix?
I'll go ahead and give it an 8, maybe an 8.5. Great match. I think the ending had to be something nobody saw coming. And the fact is that no, I don't think that WWE was prepared for Cena to hit Flair's brain just yet. I almost feel like maybe that was a Triple H call. Just the fact of how close he is to Rick, including John Stewart. I think that was just a thrill for John to be involved in it, for Stewart to be involved, excuse me, John Stewart, whatever you want to call him, just to be involved in this and be able to be get physical. I think they did that for Stewart's purposes and just allowing him to take part in such a high profile match that nobody saw that this little guy would come in and cost Cena the match, you know. They're really pushing Rollins to the moon and back, so
yeah.
I'd give it an 8.5. It was a great performance.
Yeah, it was. I will not knock that match. I mean, it was a really good match. The finish, you're right. Nobody saw it coming. Who could have predicted the way that went down? So I would definitely agree there. Definitely different. Nobody could have predicted that. I mean, there were so many things swirling around. I don't even want to get to addressing them because we talk about them. We talk for hours related to that finish and what could happen, which didn't. But so yeah, good thoughts on that. I'm going to be short on this next one. Divas three-way elimination. Now when I say three-way, I mean the three team two, and it had nothing to do with the girls because the ladies the night before tore the house down with Sasha and Bayley. I just, you know, it's just a car crash. It was these three teams. It felt like they were, you know, let's put 9 women out there. I didn't enjoy it. Didn't enjoy it. I give it a 2. Doc, would you give it?
3, and I think this weekend was a tale of two worlds. It's the way NXT presents the female division and the struggles that that WWE is still having. And I, again, you and I laugh about it, but I can still see Nikki going to John and saying, "You need to talk to Vince, John. This is some bullshit. I am not losing that title."
That's a running joke between us. Yeah, Felix, we always joke that Nikki's running to John, and she's chirping in his ear constantly about what needs to happen. And like when they brought up the NXT girls, like we immediately were like, yeah, she ran to John and, "John, this is some bull crap. You need to get this fixed. We're not having this around here. This is not how we roll, John." Anyway, long story. So Felix, what's your rating on that match?
Well, to kind of go off of what you guys just said, there had been a rumor, because I was actually on another show this past Sunday, and the rumor that had been talked about or discussed on that show was that WWE obviously has a list of people that they don't really want to acknowledge anymore, and one of them is being CM Punk. Now, obviously, mm-hmm. it keeps being brought up that she's on the verge, Nikki's on the verge of ending AJ Lee's reign, and they want to let her win that reign. But the original plan for SummerSlam, going back to this rumor, was that Nikki was supposed to have a match with Charlotte, and Charlotte was supposed to win. However, John went to bat for Nikki and kind of demolished that idea. And thus, there you have another three-way tag team match, which made absolutely no sense. And obviously, they got a bad reaction on Raw, and they get mad about it. I'll give credit where credit's due. They are talented women, some of them,
mm-hmm.
but they are not. They're more concerned with makeup and reality TV than wrestling. I don't care how long you've been there. Fox, you've been there 9 years. Bella's been there 6 or 7 years. You know what? The attitude speaks for itself. I don't feel passion. I don't, and it's therefore giving it a 2.5.
Yeah, I agree. And Doc was talking about that rumor that you talked about. I forgot. Go ahead and mention. I know you were on a show. What was it, Sunday?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know you said it on your show. I don't remember the name of it. I mean, you can go ahead and plug it if you want. That's cool.
Damage 360 Radio.
Yeah. Damage 360. I couldn't remember the name of it. I knew you had mentioned it. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that is a true story. Or let me say this. That may have been what eventually came out, but the truth is not far from that, if that makes sense.
Hey, John, these podcasts are talking bad about me. You need to go to talk to Vince and tell him to stop talking bad about me on these podcasts.
Well, she'll just probably tell us to kiss her ass.
That too.
Mike, do we need to hang up real quick? I know Total Divas is on, and that's your favorite show. Are we still good to keep going?
You kiss my ass. All right. Cesaro versus Owens is next up, and I thought it was really good. I was glad to see Owens win. I mean, he had take a couple of pinfalls. I mean, for Christ's sakes. But I was glad to see Owens win. And I'm not going to sit there and tell you that was a 10. I give that one an 8.5 or 9. What about you, Doc?
I'll go there with you, and I think going forward, it's the two of the main guys that I care about. You know, you say Sheamus and Orton could be better if you change their dance partners. I think those two guys in Owens and Cesaro are pretty interesting, almost no matter who they're up against right now. So to put them together is just fantastic.
Yeah, agree. What do you think, Felix?
You know, people crap on Owens quite a bit because he's not a muscular guy. He's not physically fit. But his matches speak for themselves. No matter – it doesn't necessarily mean WWE. Look at his Ring of Honor career. You know, yeah, it was a lot of brutality, but his matches were incredible. And the guy is agile for a big man. And
he knows how to work.
Exactly. That's the point. And then you put him in there with a guy like Cesaro, it almost was a no-win for either one because both are so underutilized now, especially after the loss to Cena for Owens. And since Tyson Kidd had been taken off. Even before then, mm-hmm. Cesaro was just so not pushed. And these two put on a heck of a performance. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I actually almost predicted this match to be the best match of the night.
and it came pretty damn close. You know, it was in the definitely a top matches of the night for sure.
I remember you saying that. I think when we recorded last week and we were on your show, I remember you saying you thought that was the match of the night. So definitely agree. Really good. I have, since the minute I saw Owens come out and at NXT, I don't want to say from day one I was like, this guy is legit. But the more I watched him, I bought in quickly on him and was really happy to see him go up to the main roster. Just a superb talent. The thing about him that I respect the most, as a former indie guy in the 90s and early 2000s, is he paid his dues. And I'm not saying that people don't do that, but with him, he paid his dues. He spent a lot of time out there perfecting his craft and getting good, and I really respect that about him, and I'm really glad to see what's going on with him. Last match, I know what Felix is going to say about this, I think, but I'm gonna wait. Undertaker versus Brock, kind of a weird finish. But they were trying to surprise us and trying to do something maybe that was different, that was not predictable. Undertaker gets the win over Brock, although in an unconventional manner, I guess if you want to call it that. I'm not going to crap on a match because I thought Undertaker, just at his age and his physical condition, I thought he really did well. I thought both of them did. I'll say 7.5. Doc, what did you think about it?
I think you have to give the Undertaker – I mean, that guy obviously gets ultimate respect for being the conscience of the locker room, just the legend that he is. And I think you have to give him a lot of credit for squeezing out as much as he has out of a 50-year-old body to stand in there and go toe to toe with Lesnar. That being said, it's getting real hard to buy him and Lesnar in the ring together. And that's hard to say, but, I mean, it's the truth. And I think you've got to go into WrestleMania next year. And most people, I'll go against most people, but I think he has to go in at WrestleMania and look up at the lights on his way out. Hey, Ric Flair did it, and others have done it. So I think, you know, hopefully that was his next to last match, and we won't see him till next WrestleMania. And once again, I think they've out-tricked themselves on the booking at the end of the match.
He is not going to look up at the lights, but I'm going to let my buddy Felix, who really is a big Undertaker fan, he's not going to look up at the lights on his last match. This is my opinion. Felix, go ahead and tell us what you think about Taker and Brock.
You know, people have been crapping on the way the ending happened and controversy and, oh, Taker should just retire. How dare he do something like that? People seem to forget that this man was a big-time heel and it is not above him to win at all costs. And here's the thing. That streak is gone, and although it's the loss of that streak is still stings for a lot of people, with nothing to lose and wanting to prove a point that he would do whatever it took to take this big man down, he proved that. And now because the internet wrestling community, the fans are so fickle. Oh, you know, how dare he give low blows to Brock week after week, and he just ain't got it no more. And you know what? That's just hoo-ha. Because, you know, the match itself, and people will take into consideration his age and the fact that he'd gone in for years upon years, 25 years of loyal service to the WWE, wrestling with broken ribs, wrestling with a broken eye socket, coming out there when the company was at its lowest and still being there. And, yes, for 13 years, I mentioned this on my show, these two went back and forth, and Taker believed in Brock. Otherwise, he wouldn't have allowed the streak to end. I know he had some kind of influence on it. I know ultimately it rests on Vince, but Taker has some kind of influence as well. Vince trusts the Undertaker, and Taker saw something in Brock and still does, you know. And those two came into this and had a great match. Brock is incredibly so strong. I don't even think he knows his actual strength. And, yes, Taker is banged up, beat up. You can feel it. You can see it. And he doesn't do a lot of things he used to do, the flying over the top rope anymore. You don't see that happen anymore, you know. But the match itself, because it was a fight. Let's just call it what it was. It was a fight. You know, there wasn't no technical holes except for maybe the submissions and so forth. And then the way he ended it, that's old school Undertaker way of ending it. You look back at the match that he had with Kurt Angle on SmackDown, he did the same thing. The referee, as the referee was counting three, he tapped out as referee hit three. So it was like controversial. Huh. Like, what the heck? It was a controversial.
I didn't think about that.
Recycled ending to get people talking. I don't, and I said this on my show, I don't want this feud to happen anymore. I want it to be done. I really do. And I know good things have to come to an end, and he's had 25 loyal years of service to the company. I know he's going to retire soon. I don't like it because, you know, in my heart, I always will be a diehard Undertaker fan. I've been ever since he was before The Undertaker and in WCW as me and Mark. But there's going to lead to another match. Some are predicting it, Hell in a Cell, maybe even a Survivor Series. Some are even banking on WrestleMania, which is such a shame because I don't want another match with those two at WrestleMania. And people will crap on my opinion, but that's fine. It's my opinion. I would want to see Sting, Undertaker, WrestleMania, both retire on top and be done with it and then end with Taker's Hall of Fame induction in his own state of Texas. The match itself, I will go ahead and I will give it a 9 because in reality there is no perfect match, and I'm not going to give it a perfect rating. I will give it a 9, and I'll even go as far as saying maybe a 9.5.
Yeah, it was a solid match. I'm not gonna crap on the match. The finish was weird, but I hadn't even thought about the whole Kurt Angle match that you're referring to. I don't even remember that. But yeah, that's the thing about wrestling too. Wrestling recycles a lot of stuff. So if there are fans that say, hey, it was a recycled finish, I hate to break the news to you, buddy, if you're 15, 20 years old, but some of us have been around this planet for a little while, and wrestling is a bunch of recycled stuff. You've probably seen almost every finish a bunch of times. So, you know, guys like us who have been around and watched it and seen it a bunch of times, we know how it works. A lot of stuff is recycled. So, you know, let's not get carried away with the whole recycled stuff. So that's a good point, Felix. I didn't even think about that. Let me get to these. We're starting to run short on time, so let me get to the questions that we got because we got a couple more. I had Ryan on Facebook sent me a question, and you all can feel free to jump in. I'm going to give a quick response. He said, and this has nothing to do with WWE. This is what I like about this one. It says, what makes an independent show great? Ryan, indies have a lot of different things to deal with versus like a WWE, even a TNA, Ring of Honor. Indie shows, like if you have a Fed, they only run every so often. I mean, Even the best ones. I mean, it's not like most of them aren't running weekly in the same town. So what makes it great is they need to. It's got to be impactful each and every time because they only have so many opportunities. Like they don't have like WWE where there's two shows being rolled out or even three with NXT rolled out weekly. So it's got to be impactful. You got to have memorable stuff. You got to have really really solid matches all the way around. I mean, you got to be prideful from start to finish with an indie show. Not that WWE and the big boys don't have to be, but I especially think that indies from start to finish have to give you a sound quality product. I like it when the indies have a name or two on each card, and then they showcase their I don't want to call it local talent, but indie talent that really might not have as big of a name. But that's just my thoughts on it. Doc, do you have anything additional you'd like to add?
It never hurts if you can bring in your own flask or beer for the fans. Get them rowdy.
Felix, what are your thoughts on it?
Honestly, I haven't attended very many indie shows in quite a number of years. But yeah, you want to feel like you're emotionally invested in these people that you don't really see on TV all the time. You want to see a good match. You want to feel the crowd. You want to feel the crowd in into it. And it's a hit and miss a lot of the times because of the fact that these characters are not known as good as, what you see on TV. So if they get a good crowd and they get good matches, you're going to get a good reaction from the crowd for those matches. That's really all I can say about it because, that's what I would want.
Yeah, agree. So here's a question. This is from a Facebook listener, Chris. Chris says, and I think we only got time for about one or two more, but with the WWE being PG, What do you guys make of Paul Heyman cutting a promo at the start of the show where he says there is no Santa Claus or Easter Bunny? Was that out of line in hour one where a lot of kids were probably watching? It probably was, because I had a 10-year-old and 7-year-old who were tuned in, who I know the 7-year-old still believes in Santa Claus. So that's just my thoughts. Doc, out of line?
In the wrestling show I want to see, not at all. In fact, they'd come out and kick Santa Claus's ass on TV. But if you're going to position yourself as a publicly traded company and a BPG and market to the kiddies, yeah, probably.
Okay. Felix?
No. Actually, I don't think it's a bad idea. It's television. It's not real. You know, it's up to the parents if they want to make sure that they understand, that the kids understand that this is just TV. It is just a story. You know, if you want to believe the story, that's your choice. But it's obviously there to entertain, nothing more, nothing less. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Bring Santa Claus out there, drop his ass, drop an elbow, whatever you got to do. Or, you know, and people got offended with Heyman faking a heart attack mocking Jerry Lawler. People are just too damn sensitive. Get over it. It's just television. It's entertainment. Get over it.
Now, that's true. You make a good point on that. We get oversensitive related to television nowadays and product that's out there when it's entertainment. I mean, it's not real life. I will say that. I think. I mean, I'm not going to say sometimes the line isn't crossed with certain things, but it can get over. People
this
can be oversensitive.
Hey, this is a company that once had The Undertaker hang Steve Austin from a cross-like apparatus. So
yeah,
we've come quite a long way in 15 or 17 years.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. Hey, last question before we wrap up, and Felix, I'll let you plug your stuff before we get out of here. Would Vince ever put the belt on Sting? And if he would, should he? And that's from Vic on Facebook. I would like to see it. The only problem is he would give it to him to have a cup of coffee and then take it right away. It wouldn't be a long-term thing. That's my problem with that. Doc, I'll let you chime in.
I think there's so many young, athletic guys that are just clawing at each other to grab the brass ring that, in all honesty, I think it would – no, I don't want to see it. I'd almost rather Cena get it again than Sting. I was never a huge Sting fan anyway, because I loved it when the Horseman used to whip his ass constantly in the late 80s and early 90s. So I respect his body of work. Sting seems like a really good guy. But he's also at, 51, 52, 53. I think, you know, when does Rick get another title reign at 66 or 67? So, no, I think you go in a different direction there.
Yeah, I hear you on that one. But what about you, Felix? What do you think?
Ultimately, I do believe they would give him a title run. It'd be a short one. There's no need to have a long one. However, him and Seth Rollins, I think just for the fact that they can involve Sting in some form or fashion is what they want. If they allow him to get the belt, cool. He'd probably just drop it at Hell in a Cell anyways, or Survivor Series or whatever. But the fact that they wanted to bring him in and keep him involved in the story is what they wanted to do. And it's a WWE thing. He's never held a title in WWE, so that's another thing they could go for. Sting is older. Doesn't really need the title reign. His career speaks for itself. You know, he will have a WWE Hall of Fame induction one day, sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think it would happen.
Yeah, I just don't want it to be one of those things where it's like for 1 month. That would be so predictable. That's my only problem. That's the one thing I don't want. That's why I say I don't want to see him just have a cup of coffee and be done with it. So, sure. All right, y'all. Well, hey, that's going to do it for the questions this week. I'm glad everybody sent them in. Just want to remind all the listeners to submit their thoughts and comments, questions, whatever. Make sure you do it by just say midday on Tuesday every week. So send them in pretty much after Raw, and send them in if you're watching TNA. We didn't get anything about TNA this week. I'm kind of not shocked.
But I dance.
I don't remember that. We're not going to go there. That was, that was so wrong. Maybe we'll talk about that next week since we're short on time. Hey, I just want to remind everybody, make sure you are following us on Facebook, Facebook.com/ Book in the Territory, and then on the Twitter page at @BTT_podcast, and then you can follow me too at Mike504Saints. Felix, go ahead and plug Pipe Bomb, man. I'll give you some time. I know you graciously allowed me and appreciated you having me on last week, so go ahead and plug what you got going on.
No problem. Thank you. You can check us out on our website, pipebombradio.net, for all of our social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Stitcher, Pinterest, iTunes, YouTube. We're basically everywhere. If you can't find us, you're not looking hard enough. Tonight we have a guest coming on. He is an independent wrestler here out of Southern California, Brawlin' Bo Cooper, coming out here for the show. After we did an incredible Roddy tribute about 2 weeks ago and last week's analysis of SummerSlam, we keep the momentum going for September. And, yeah, just check us out. You'll get all of our social media that you need. All of the information that you need on the show is on pipebombradio.net.
Yeah, and Felix's show has been around. What you been around, 4 years now, right, Felix?
It will be 4 years. Well, yeah, 4 years. It'll be 4 years, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's had some real good guests. I mean, he's had on, like, Bret Hart, and if you're, around my age, you'll probably remember Jimmy Boogie Woogie Man Valiant. He had him on a couple weeks ago. He's had on, I think you've had on Bruno, too. I mean, you've had on a bunch of really, really good guests. So make sure you check Felix out. He's got a good show. He's been doing for a while. They know what they're doing. It's him and Nate Milton, one of our former guests that we had on as well. So, hey, Felix, I appreciate you joining. Doc, you got anything before we get out of here, man?
We're getting closer to football season, Mike. The all-work league.
The all-work league, man. When the NFL decides to finally admit that they are just booking the territory like everybody else, then I'll tune back into the NFL. I'm joking. I'm going to watch. I mean, but it just ticks me off that it's basically a work. Maybe one day you'll wake up and smell the coffee, Doc. That's all we got today, folks. So for Mike, Doc, and myself, we appreciate you tuning in as always. And thanks again to Felix for joining us. Appreciate y'all tuning in. Be back next week. Same time, same place. Catch us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean. We're all there. Till next time, for Mike and Doc and Felix, book it.